Go right ahead. You were mentioning an encounter with Mr. Warren.
Yes, when I was in command of the 3rd Corps in February of 1946, I was designated to represent the Army in the resuscitation of the Desert Cavalcade. It had been suspended during the war, and they wanted to reactivate it. And I went down to Calexico, and the two towns, border towns, Calexico and Mexicali, were resuscitating the Desert Cavalcade, which depicted the trek of De Anza from old Fort Tubac in Arizona to San Francisco. And while there, I was associated with the governors of California and Lower California. Earl Warren was the governor of California, and a very impressive person at that time, to me particularly, because he had been nominated by both parties in his last election to governor of California. And we, he and the governor of Lower California were associated in the event. We went over with my staff and the governor's staff to call on the governor of Lower California. And arrangements were made for the governor of Lower California to return the call that afternoon. And when Governor Warren returned to the hotel, he left word that he had a very important call and didn't want to be disturbed before 7 o'clock. The governor of Lower California arrived before 7, and the operator at the desk wouldn't disturb Governor Warren. And so the governor of Lower California got in a high dudgeon and went back to Mexico.
Oh, man.
Or with me.
And we had arranged for the crowning of the queen of the cavalcade that evening. When we arrived at the scene, fortunately, my chief of artillery was quite a Spanish linguist and sensed something was wrong and got in touch with the commander of troops, of the Mexican troops, and said, "Here, what's the matter?" And they told him that what had happened. And he said, "Well, you can't imagine the governor of California being intending to make have it offend the governor of Lower California. So they finally got together and ironed out the trouble, and the governor of Lower California came up, and we had the successful crowning of the queen. And the next morning, Governor Warren and I had a sunrise breakfast sitting on opposite ends of a bale of hay out in the desert. I was quite impressed with him.
Well, he made quite a radical departure after he...
Well, after that, I heard rumblings of his socialistic trends and was quite shocked. And the thing that shocked me most of all was when he was nominated to be with Dewey, to be the vice president, the person who put him in nomination was my ex-inspector general of the 79th Division. Or a student, or an instructor. So I sensed, and in connection with those activities, we had some kind of field maneuvers almost every year. And I got impressed with the attitude of the young officer. He wanted to be the operations man, the great planner, so forth. And I found out he wasn't 100% informed about or gave very much consideration to the logistics of the operation. So I decided that if I ever were in command and lost my G3, that was the operations man, I would reach down and get the best G4 I could find and make him G3. And that's happened to me in the 70s.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah, well, you can, that will give you
that's
well, the situation had developed that we didn't have enough trained men to fill our obligations abroad or anywhere else. So we sent untrained men over to the Mediterranean to fill the vacancies that occurred in the units over there. And naturally, they were not only untrained, but they were very young, and some of them were homesick. And Ruark would find one along the street and get his reaction. Of course, he was homesick, and he was everything was wrong. And Ruark did not check up his information. He simply published it far and wide. That was the general...
A muck-breaking type.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when we got through, you'll find in the record of the investigation the conclusions and so on.
Or most of
he after I made the investigation, he got a little bit of satisfaction from the endorsements that went on it from the chief of staff and the secretary. So he put in a little article in the paper about it, and he referred to me as deaf as a post. And the Charlotte News published that. So I wrote and asked them what good would it do? What good was accomplished by having my picture with that title in the paper when they had neither a picture of General Lee or Ruark? And I got a weaseling answer saying that I was prominent in the investigation. And that was about all. Perfectly terrible press business.
Oh, yeah. That's very poor journalism all the way around.
Very poor journalism.
Well, were these primarily young officers or were these veterans? Were the officers there that Rourke had talked with, were they primarily young officers?
No, these were the enlisted men, mostly.
Oh, they were
the recruits were where he got his... his scandal, as he called it. But he, then when the thing subsided, of course, and when, then he got out a classic, Ruark did. The Old Man and the Boy is a real American classic.
Yes, sir.
It's, and I was on the point of writing him a letter congratulating him on the ability to produce a literary classic in American literature. And then I had in my mind to wonder how one who stooped as low as he did in the Mediterranean could have done it. But about that time, General Lee died, and a reiteration of some of his stuff, of Ruark's stuff, came out. So I didn't write him.
I have always enjoyed his African novels.
Well, he was a very clever writer. I didn't read that he had a novel that came out about the time he was getting out these allegations against the Mediterranean.
That was his first major novel,
yeah.
Was it not?
Some Woman's Name, I think.
I know it.
I'm not ready. I am ready.
Okay.